Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. And in a year of record low homicides in New York City, Kathleen Horan's series, In Harm's Way, has profiled 10 teenagers who were shot and killed. Kathleen is WNYC's criminal justice reporter, and this has been her beat for the last year, in addition to her other reporting, profiling every child killed by gunfire in the city. Kathleen Horan joins me now as the series concludes. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Brian.
And as listeners have been hearing your profiles on the station over the last year and your conversations on the show about them periodically, can you step back and remind us, what was your goal? Why take on such an emotionally daunting task?
We wanted to find out who these kids were. There was an uptick in shootings at the, you know, during the summer of 2012. There was also an uptick in 2011. And as I was covering some of these funerals, our news director wisely suggested and decided that we should do a series and really look at over time who these youngest victims of gunfire were, especially as the debate about guns and gun control was heating up, and because about 59% of the people who are victims of homicide, it's by gun.
So let me read the names of all 10 who you profiled, because I think that's a lot of the point. Ronald Wallace, Caim Vieira, Jorge Rosario, Xavier Granville, Raphael Ward, Kamani Gray, Alphonse Bryant, Deaja Robinson, Kamau Chandler, Shalivar Douse, and that's it. And I wanted to say all their names because that is the point of this series, to treat them as individuals, not statistics, right?
That's right. That's where most of the kids and other victims who live in the city's worst neighborhoods, who are, you know, killed by stray gunfire or, you know, by a perpetrator who wanted them dead, oftentimes it's a couple lines in a tabloid and then they're forgotten and then there's a new victim.
And so here's an example of Kathleen's work profiling Ronald Wallace. He was the first child who she had to profile for the series. And this clip begins with the voice of his mother.
He came home one day and I said, "You got a mohawk?" And it got so high. And then next thing you know, he cut it off. And I said, "Ronald, what have you?" He said, "I wanted something different."
They say he'd scoot over to the nearby barbershop whenever he was ready to change his look.
And he'd come back with a tape up. What is that other haircut? A medium Caesar. He go get the haircut that fits him.
Even though he was the master of his own style, stood 5'10", and wore size 13 sneakers, he wasn't too big to be babied. His mom said she'd often do things for him like wash his face or brush his teeth.
He would let me, but then he'd get mad, like if his brothers is around. Because if they have an argument, they'd say, "That's why mommy brushing your teeth."
Kathleen, I think that you started the series, and you said this a minute ago, last year at a time when it seemed like, looking at the numbers, the homicide rate for teens in the city was starting to go up. And yet just yesterday there was news from Commissioner Kelly about a drop in the number of young New Yorkers killed in this city. There's been a 50% decrease in homicides of victims aged 13 to 21. And I think it changed the context of the series for our listeners and for the city as a whole, which is that you thought that this was going to be a time when more teens were going to get killed, and we have to take each one seriously because we're entering dangerous territory here. As it turns out, there was yet another record decrease in the homicide rate, including in this age group. But it packs a whole other kind of power as a result, because even at a time when we talk about declining homicide rates and celebrate that, and that's the dominant conversation that the media is having about murder in New York, there are still individuals who get killed, and maybe even more so than during times of high crime rates. Their individual stories tend to fall through the cracks.
Well, you can spend more perhaps with each victim. If there was, 80 kids shot in a year, it would be hard, especially for one person, to profile each one. But it's happening to the same people. I mean, more than 95% of victims are black and brown, and more than 95% of suspects are black and brown. And so, it's in the same high crime neighborhoods, and people in these neighborhoods don't experience the same drop in crime. Certainly, it's not to the level that it was, but they have a different experience than, say, you or I do.
And they're in the projects.
Most of them live in NYCHA buildings, yes.
And, of course, the disproportionality of their presence in the projects raises issues that I think the next mayor, next commissioner of police have to deal with. Here's the mother of one of the victims you spoke with who talked about the crime statistics. This is Aisha Tyree, who not only lost her son to gun violence, but her son's father as well.
It angers me a lot when I turn on TV and they keep saying that crime is down. Where?
And she was in the projects, right?
She lived all her life in public housing.
6 of the 10 kids you profile were NYCHA residents. What does that tell us is going on?
It's a complicated problem. 20% of violent crime happens in the projects, even though only 5% of people live there. There's a lot of people living on top of each other, a lot of people who are poor, who are marginalized, who are struggling. And as I know that you wanted to touch on, street crews often bond and operate and develop out of these buildings. And much of the violence, about 30% of the shootings, and what the NYPD says is from this tit-for-tat violence between street crews.
And as for the success rate in decreasing the number of homicides ages 13 to 21, this 50% decrease this year, Commissioner Kelly attributes it to something called Operation Crew Cut. What's that?
That is a team, a unit that's dedicated to really monitoring what's going on between these crews before it ever gets to a shooting. And these groups often communicate, like all kids, on social media. And so their beefs and their one-upmanship and their communication is on Facebook, it's on Twitter, it's on YouTube. They make oftentimes videos threatening each other to a funky beat. And it culminates in, it playing out on the streets.
Is the word crew synonymous with the word gang?
It's not. Gangs are usually interested in some kind of monetary gain, and other kinds of very organized kinds of processes, whereas crews is really, it's really about turf, and it's about having a name on the street and identity and all sorts of things that kids really care about.
And the NYPD says that 30% of all the shootings in the city in recent years is crew-related, and I guess that syncs with the circumstances of the shootings in your series In Harm's Way.
That's right. Some of these kids were members of crews or believed to be members of crews. Sometimes the families tell me different. They have a different experience than what the NYPD believes, but most of the suspects and many of the kids were to one degree or another involved in crews. I mean, it's not always so black and white. It's, these might be your friends and they live in your building and, you have to be friends with them to get in the right into the door safely.
And so, for example, you reported about Ronald Wallace. He was 13 when he was killed last summer in Brownsville. And he was the first kid you profiled in the series. He was shot by Akbar Johns, a 17-year-old who, allegedly he was shot. He was charged. I don't know if he's pleaded or been convicted, but he's in prison. Apparently a member of the Addicted to Cash crew. That's the name of the crew, Addicted to Cash. Can you tell us a little bit about what happened in that case?
Well, Ronald, like all of these kids, was hanging outside. All of these kids were shot and killed outside. He was with friends. It was the end of summer. His mother told me he was leaving McDonald's. He was with his brother. He was with a a girlfriend, and they were just hanging out in the neighborhood in Brownsville. The police say he was also drinking with friends, and he was in a rival crew, and Akbar Johns came up, said what's up, and shot him in the back, and he died.
And we played that clip a minute ago of Aisha Tyree, whose 17-year-old son, Kaim Vieira, was shot 10 times last September. No suspect was ever arrested in that case. So what about the nine kids? The other nine kids you profile for this series, have there been arrests? And does it tell us anything about the shooters or how they got their weapons?
Well, two of the kids were killed in police-involved shootings. So that's a big number out of 10 kids from August to August.
Meaning police, weapon, bullets?
Meaning that police said they needed to kill them to disarm them. Shaliver Douse and Kamani Gray were both.
Of course, Kamani Gray was in the news. That case was really controversial.
It was controversial. And so, you know, in both cases, police said that they were pointing weapons either at a person they were trying to shoot or at the cops themselves. And both cases are still being investigated. I mean, their family and friends would tell another story, and it's still being looked at by the DAs. And two of the cases, no suspects have been apprehended. And then in the rest, there are suspects, and they're all going through the criminal justice process. They're all being held on Rikers.
So here's another clip of Tyree talking about the lives of these teens who were friends of her son, Kaim.
It's like you have a lot of the adolescents who just don't have any hope. It's like when you speak to them, or even when you look at their post on Facebook, because I have a lot of his friends who befriended me, you have a lot of people who say, I know I'm going to die, and if I'm going to die, I'm ready to die, and it's like it's going to happen.
So do you have a sense in these communities, are there conversations about the larger problems afflicting the teens, the kids who feel so disconnected from the rest of the city, who wind up disproportionately on either end of these shootings? Or was that outside the scope of your reporting, because this series was really to humanize the individual?
You know, it's a good question. There are a lot of conversations going on. I mean, all of these parents were working to the best of their ability to keep their kids safe. They all loved them in impossible, complicated ways. And so they wanted to keep their kids off the streets. They wanted to keep their kids away from, you know, people that would put them in harm's way. But they weren't successful at it. And there's a lot of shame that they feel about that. So some of the parents now are working toward helping other kids. They've started foundations. They're talking in schools. They're trying to create community centers and you know, basketball leagues. So that's part of it. Tell me the other part of your question.
I think you answered the question. And that was whether your reporting project, since it was focused on the individuals, was not really to look at the underlying social conditions, that's a different kind of series.
It was a way into the social conditions, and I plan to continue to go beyond profiles, but certainly getting to spend a lot of time in all different communities with people who are, you know, part of the statistics. It's a much more nuanced, it's a much more complicated story that brings in all of the different themes that any criminal justice reporter would be looking at, whether it's guns and gangs and police-community relations and poverty and housing and schools and all of that stuff. It's all contained in these stories, and it's underneath these stories.
It was a one-year series. It was announced from the start as a one-year series. And interesting that it started just before the shooting in Newtown, Connecticut, when a lot of people might have rushed to something like this. You came to it before Newtown.
That's just how it happened. There was a lot of kids getting killed in one summer, and so, you know, we just decided to look at that.
Did you consider whether to continue this as a permanent part of your beat, or whether it has a place going forward in a different kind of way than we may have reported before in our newsroom, now that you've set this precedent?
We are continuing. I will tell you as we would officially, you know, announce what the next series is, but it's looking at the themes that I just mentioned in a deeper way, because, you know, there's all of these things underneath, you know, that make people's lives miserable and that make people unsafe. And people that live throughout the city, you know, we know that Bill de Blasio ran, his slogan was A Tale of Two Cities. And, you know, it's more than a slogan. That's really what's happening.
And we will have to leave it there with WNYC's Kathleen Horan. She's our criminal justice correspondent. And you can find a link at WNYC.org to the entire remarkable series that she's done over the last year, In Harm's Way, profiling every minor in New York City who was killed by gunfire. It turned out to be 10, much smaller number than you anticipated, thank goodness, down 50% from the year before, but still 10 too many, and a very powerful way to look at the risks of being a kid in New York. Thank you very much, Kathleen.
Thanks, Brian.